Om Shri Sai Ram. Offering myself at Bhagwan's lotus feet, this is Karuna signing in live from Prashanti Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. And on behalf of the entire team at Radio Sai, I wish all our listeners Bhagwan's choicest blessings in profusion via these airwaves. Good morning and welcome to Morning Glory on Radio Sai's Asia stream on this very sacred Vijayadashmi or Dasera day, October the 22nd, 2015. Dear brothers and sisters, I have just sprinted my way back to the studio from the Purnachandra Auditorium, where moments ago I witnessed the culmination, I along with several thousands of people from all over the world, witnessed the culmination of this Vedic extravaganza in the form of the Purna Ahuti, or the conclusion of the Veda Purusha Yajna. To witness the final offerings into the sacred fire was really so spiritually energizing, to say the least. And then the sprinkling of that cool sacred water over the entire enormous congregation was, soul-quenching seems about right. The priests dressed in bright orange spread across the entire auditorium and outside the auditorium where thousands were waiting eagerly. And then they went about sprinkling holy water from the special yajna bowls using those long darbha grass brushes. And the excitement in the crowd was palpable. And then of course there was the usual delicious prasadam from Anand Sweets. As we all know, Dasera in Parthi is always extraordinarily special and sacred, and it's phenomenal to watch so many diverse cultures and races and religions participating wholeheartedly in the week-long yajna. It really is a very charged day here in Prashanti today, as you can well imagine. Right now, every grain of sand, every wisp of air, every leaf on trees is pulsating with the divine energy, because the past 10 days were simply out of this world here in the ashram. Everything felt so heavenly. First, we had the Veda Purusha Yajna throughout the Navratri, which has just concluded moments ago. That is a tradition that Bhagwan started way back in 1957 as part of his mission to revive Sanatan Dharma, which is basically a harmonious and peaceful way of life as prescribed in the Vedas. My favorite part during the yajna is when the Vedic pandits begin to recite sacred mantras while making offerings in the fire. Now, as we all know, Bhagwan's students, right from grade 1, are also proficient in Veda chanting. So when thousands of voices from the students join the chanting, you can feel that energy just surging. I can't help but think of all the angels, the devis, the devas that must be drawn to the yajna with such a charged and powerful chanting in tender voices going on. And what is really astonishing is the way the ashram is keeping up all the grand traditions that Bhagwan started. And in fact, everything is being done with greater attention to detail and on a grander scale. Even today, Bhagwan remains at the center stage of all the prayers, as well as the just concluded yajna for world peace and for the well-being of the universe. This year, once again, the crowds were enormous. Our ashram hosted thousands of devotees from all over the world who came to participate in the 9 days of prayers and blessings. The only, and I repeat, the one and only place on the face of earth where all cultures, Christians, Jews, Muslims, Hindus, Buddhists, Jains, all faiths, colors and races join hands to pray for world harmony, universal peace, not only on our planet but in the entire universe, is Prashanti Nilayam, making it the spiritual capital of the universe. So, it's not an exaggeration at all. The yajna is essentially about sacrifice being an effective tool for self-transformation. But the yajna with the fire and the ghee and the Veda chanting was only one small part of the larger yajna that Bhagwan initiated here in Prashanti as part of the Dasera tradition. A way larger yajna takes place behind the scenes in the villages around Puttaparthi during this time. Yes, it is the Sri Satya Sai Gram Seva that all four campuses of the Satisai University, all high schools of Baba in Puttaparthi participate in and have been doing so for the past 10 days. This is a tradition going on for years. I want to share with you some interesting details about this experiential learning of Sai teachings through Gram Seva, but I'll save it for later on in the show. And on October 20th, the Avatar Declaration Day, Baba's grateful daughters, that is, his alumni students from his school, that is, women students from his school in Puttaparthi and his university campus at Anantapur, sang melodious bhajans in unison from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. in the Divine Presence. It was a wonderful initiative led by Mrs. Pushpa Ramana, the former vice warden and librarian of the Anantapur campus of the Sai University. And this event saw women alumni come from places as far as the USA to join in the 6 hours of uninterrupted bhajan singing with joy and gratitude. And thousands more joined virtually through the live webcast. This was the very first time in a very long time that we had an opportunity, the ex-students of Baba, the women ex-students, to experience such a moment of utter bliss and nostalgia and deep emotion. And I assure you that everyone left on a high, wanting to have more of such experiences in the future. With that wrap up now, I'm happy to play for you the conclusion of the Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories conversation that I started here on Morning Glory last week. Today you can hear part 2 of Mr. Sainath's conversation with my colleague Mr. Bishu Prushti. And in case, dear listeners, you're wondering why Morning Glory started almost an hour late, it is 39 minutes past 10 a.m. Indian Standard Time right now. That is because we were live webcasting all the proceedings, the grand proceedings in the Purnachandra Auditorium for the benefit of our viewers all over the world. So as soon as the aarti concluded, within few moments, I logged in. And here now is Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories with Mr. Sainath, part 2. This is the conclusion. Have a listen, please.
It is so amazing when you see how Bhagwan gives us a lesson. He tells us what we are supposed to do. And then he holds our hands and takes us there till we reach there.
Yeah.
All the time guiding us, you know, even if falter, he'll pick us up, but you know, because he really wants us to get there. See, he doesn't stop by just telling this is what you have to do. He will be there at every step to ensure that we have learned that lesson in its entirety.
That is because he always goes by the effort.
Yes.
The intention.
Yes.
He never cared for the results. I'll tell you openly, you know, he never ever bothered, you know, about the result of the outcome. What his prime focus was on the intention and the method.
Wow.
Always. Intention was first, and second was how sincere we were in the effort. Isn't it? So that's the first one was what was the intention, second one was the effort. If both are sincere, he would just not bother about the result.
Result.
He would never bother. It's in one of the dramas, you know, S.D. Sharma, the then president of India, the late S.D. Sharma.
Shankar Dayal Sharma.
He had come and, you know, it was raining heavily. And, you know, convocation drama. You know how much of effort goes into
yes.
it, how much of effort Swami himself puts into
yes.
it. Forget the student side. How much effort Swami
only
himself
yourselves,
puts into it.
Which Bhagwan himself is present to guide and watch.
And, you know, so it was raining. And after the convocation was over, Swami brought President S.D. Sharma back. And where Swami was still staying in the Bhajan Mandir in those days. And S.D. Sharma was staying in Poonchandra Auditorium, which was VIP guest houses in those days.
Mm-hmm.
So, two of us were looking after President S.D. Sharma's requirements and necessities. And after the convocation, you know, there is a break.
Yes.
And Swami came to the Mandir. S.D. Sharma also came to the Mandir. And then it started raining. So, Colonel Joga Rao came in a car and he told His Excellency Sri S.D. Sharma that Sir Swami has sent me. He said that it is raining. So, it's not necessary for you to come to the drama.
Mm-hmm.
Now, S.D. Sharma, Sri S.D. Sharma was such a great devotee. He said, see, that is okay, but what is Swami doing? Is he going?
Mm-hmm.
Now, only a devotee of Swami asks that kind of question. Then, Colonel Jogana said, yes, sir, Swami said that he is going. Then immediately, Sri S.D. Sharma got up and he said, see, Bhagwan jaye aur hum nahi jaye? Aisa kaisa ho sakta hai? Rain or no rain, if Bhagwan is going, I am going with him. So he said immediately he got up. He didn't even wait for the car. He just walked into the mandir. And Bhagwan told him, it seems later on there. See, why did you come? I told you it's raining, you don't need to come. He said, Swami, if you are going, how can you tell me not to come? If you are ready to get wet, I am also ready to get wet. So they both got in and went in. And there, you know, the drama was over. Everything was over. And Swami came to Poonchandra Auditorium when S.D. Sharma was having his dinner. And S.D. Sharma asked Swami, Swami, if you don't mind, can I ask you something? Ek pooch sakta hun. Swami said, haan poocho. Then he asked him, Swami, why is it that when it is raining, you went and got wet? Swami gave that umbrella to S.D. Sharma so that S.D. Sharma doesn't get wet, but Swami was getting wet.
Oh.
Yeah, he was getting wet. The umbrella was not covering both of them. So he said, Swami, why is it that you went all the way in the rain? You were prepared to get wet. Then Swami said, I went there because of the students. So he said, see, for the past so many months, they have been putting in so much of effort in the drama. Their only intention was to get one word out of me, that you have done a good job. Their entire effort was focused only on making me happy with their work. So that was all their work was all about. They didn't care for anything else. They forgot their sleep. They forgot their food. Many a time they went hungry, worked all through the night making the sets and preparing for the drama. After so much of effort, if I do not go, they would feel very bad. They would feel hurt. So I rewarded their intensity and their effort. That is why I went.
Wow.
And S.D. Sharma was so touched by that experience that after Swami left, he said, see, this is how much he loves his students. And he got the actual message because he told and he repeated it. He said, see, it is the effort and the sincerity behind the intention that Baba always rewards.
Absolutely.
And so he got the point.
I think this is something most of the students will be able to relate to in
exactly.
a sense, because you know there are so many occasions when you have sung terribly.
Yeah.
Especially in a music program, but Swami is delighted.
Yes.
Swami is very happy. Or
yes.
Sometimes there is a card which doesn't look anything really out of the world, but for some reason Swami would call and you know even create chain and. create vibhuti and
yes.
bless that. And every time we have seen that, you know, you can never ever predict Bhagwan's reaction to any particular event because it's always...
Except under one occasion. Like if you are working sincerely without actually concentrating on the result with the plain intention of, you know, pleasing Bhagwan, I think you can rest assured that, you know, the success is always going to follow. Success in what Bhagwan rates it, not as
yes.
the world rates it.
Yes.
That, I think, as student was always our prime concern.
Yes.
We wanted to succeed and make Swami happy.
Just for that smile on his face.
Yes.
You were mentioning about President Sharma coming to Bhagwan for this drama. And you are someone who also had the opportunity on many occasions in the later years to serve these dignitaries. Are there any memories of these opportunities, you know, when Bhagwan would have interacted with you a lot about how you should look after these guests and... how you should take care of their needs and was there any opportunities which really taught you some very beautiful lessons of life and tips from Bhagwan?
Yeah, the two important things I would forget. The first one was when he was training two of us. So he taught us, actually he took a bed sheet and he folded it and he said, see, this is how you fold the bed sheet.
Oh my God.
And he put it on the bed. Then he said, this is how you lay the pillow. Then this is how you put the spoon. This is how you put the fork. Napkin should be folded like this. Then, you know, soup should be served in this bowl. He was actually spending close to 50 minutes there, you know, in Poonchandra Auditorium, showing us how all this is done. And then he had a practical class for us. He said, okay, I'm sitting here. You lay the table for me.
Huh.
Yeah, lay the table for me, like how I taught you. Then, you know, like a real teacher, you know, he would rap us on the head, you know, if he made a mistake. Donna pota, idha nen cheppindi, malli chudu, and he would start demonstrating once again.
You didn't get it, do it again.
Yeah, means in English it means, yes. you know, is this how I taught you? Watch again, I'm going to demonstrate. Mm. And you would repeat the entire thing once again. Those are minute details. How we would observe and, you know, how we taught us about that. So, of course, there was a point of time, you know, where he didn't tell us anymore. Because I think he was sure, you know, that he had trained us reasonably enough. And he would not tell us anything more. But... these were also occasions where some very special moments would arise about a different aspect of Bhagwan. One of the incident which was very funny, but very educative at the same time, you know, the late Prime Minister, Chief Minister of Andhra Pradesh State, Channareddy.
Yes.
He was a regular visitor here. So, Sri Channareddy had come once and, you know, as he was a very powerful person politically, you know, there were quite a few people who wanted to gain favors from him. And while we were looking after him, you know, one of them just walked inside Poonchandra Auditorium with his slippers on.
Mm-hmm.
Some MLA, I don't know, some very important person. So, I was standing near the door, I requested him. I said, sir, can you please remove your footwear? Because footwear is not permitted inside. Then he said, he just stared at me like that and he said, step aside. And he just threw me aside and he walked.
Oh.
Yeah. Then I went after him and I told, sir, you give me your slippers. I will take it and keep it outside, but please don't walk with your footwear here. He said, see, don't disturb me. Move away. I have some very important work. To pakke dabko, he said. I went. And the second student who was there with me, you know, who was engaged in looking after the VIP, he was watching the entire thing. And he just stood on the way and he just used a stern tone. He said, sir, are you going to please remove your slippers or shall I inform Mr. Channareddy about your misbehavior? That shook that person, because Channareddy was such a powerful person and this person knew Channareddy can take action on him if he misbehaved in Swami's place. So promptly he went and he removed his slippers and he came in. So everything was over. See, no one made a second mention about this to anybody outside the four walls. Everything was over. The VIP left. And the next morning, we were sitting in the portico. This person who was there with me, the other student, was also a singer. So he was sitting inside the bhajan hall. I was sitting outside the bhajan hall. So right near the interview room door. I used to sit there. And Swami came 15 minutes before the bhajans. And he introduced to the VIP. He said, see, the other day Channareddy had come. He was very happy. He went away. No, then he just narrated a few things about what transpired between him and Channareddy. Then he said, he asked me, saw me there outside. And he said, what happened inside? The Swami was very happy. Like, no, no, what happened?
Mm-hmm.
I was not getting what was happening. I said, no, Swami, he was happy. 2 days he stayed. He was very happy. He left. He said, no, something happened. It seemed something about some slippers.
Swami said that?
Yes, Swami said. Then I recollected, I said, Swami, this is what happened. Then Swami said, okay, what did you say? I said, Swami, I requested him to give me the slippers. I said, I will keep it outside, sir. You please go without your slippers. Then Swami said, then Swami looked at some of the elders sitting on the portico and he said, see, look at this fellow, he is such a humble person, very nicely he spoke. Then he looked at me and said, but Bangaro, I'll tell you one thing. Every time in this world, if you're so polite and calm and quiet, you know, things don't work. Sometimes you have to be strong, you have to be very, you know, stubborn, you have to speak a little strongly, otherwise people won't listen to you. I said, okay, Swami. Then he went inside the bhajan hall. There the other gentleman was sitting, other student. So he asked him, what did Channareddy say? And all. Then he said, what happened? Something, Sainath was telling something about slippers. This is on me, okay. He told me, what is it about slippers? And he's telling inside, Sainath told me something about the slippers. Then that person, ah, Swami, that person came, he was very bad, he was rude. Sainath, poor fellow, he tried to tell him, you know, give him the chappals, but that person wouldn't listen. Then Swami said, what did you tell him? And Swami, I just told him that if you are not going to remove your slippers, I am going to complain to Channareddy. He'll take care of you. And what did he say? Swami, he just ran outside, removed his chappals and came immediately because that treatment worked for him. Swami said, correct treatment ichinavu vadiki. This is the right treatment you have given him. Then he told him, but Bangaru, every time if you talk rashly and strongly like this, the world will hate you. Once in a while, you should speak softly, sweetly and politely.
Wow.
What happened? So, see, that is the beauty of Swami, you know. He diagnoses the ailment and gives the correct pill. And the beauty is he uses the same situation to do both. That is such a memorable incident, you know. After that, I had little doubt, you know, that Swami is, you know, there's not actually not a problem which he cannot solve. See, it's the same incident. But I required one treatment, he required some other treatment and he gave it beautifully.
I'm actually reminded of that incident of Swami Brahmananda and Swami Vivekananda with Ramakrishna Paramahansa.
Exactly, the boat.
The boat, yes.
So, you know, it is something like that, you know, like what? Swami is a Jagat Guru, you know. That's the way a Guru operates. You know, he recognizes what is the weakness of the student, what is impeding his progress in path to a character development, and you know, he gives the right medicine. Shirdi Sai Baba also the same thing, you know, once a patient had come to him and he said, I'm suffering from very bad motion, so what do you want me to do? And Swami, you know, he just gave him a bag full of peanuts and he said, eat this. Oh, no, people will get a heart attack, you know, if you give peanuts to a person who is having diarrhea.
Yes.
The devotee also said, but devotee had that faith. He said, Sai Baba is telling, his wife told him, now how can you take peanuts on diarrhea stomach? He said, Sai Baba gave it, I'm eating it and it worked. So next time somebody else had diarrhea, they said, see, when that person had diarrhea, Baba gave him peanuts, you also ate peanuts, and this fellow got worse.
Yes.
Then when they go to Shirdi Sai Baba, Shirdi Sai Baba tells, it is not the peanuts, it is the intention and the power with which I have given the peanuts that worked. My grace flowed through the peanuts and made him happy. But that doesn't mean that all of you should start taking peanuts when you have diarrhea. They are a medium through which God made his grace flow.
Wow.
So it could have been rocks also, for all you know.
Yes.
But you should have the faith to eat the rock, yes, if the God says that you should eat.
Yes. That's amazing. Right. Yeah, if you can, you know, go on this line, where, you know, when you had that implicit faith in what Bhagwan said, you saw how Bhagwan revealed himself to you.
Yeah. Implicit faith, yes. I still remember that when I used to ask some of these older devotees who spent time with Bhagwan, they said, you know, one of the most toughest thing, you know, to remember when you are in Bhagwan's immediate presence is to forget who he is.
Hmm.
Yeah. That is the power of Maya. I'm not trying to make an excuse, you know, about why I didn't capitalize on my moments with Bhagwan.
It is really a challenge. Because you are constantly living with a supreme consciousness who is also shrouded so much with this Maya.
And sometimes he'll be so lost, you know, my shaving cream is over, you know, I have water, I want cold water, why is not there? You'll forget, you know, you will think, or suddenly you will tell, guests have come, where is the juice? What is this, you know, we don't keep any juice in Punchanga auditorium, doesn't he know it, where do I get juice from? So you forget. You forget, you know, who is the one who is talking to you and in whose presence you are there.
Yes.
So, that is Maya. I have discovered that, you know, that's the biggest challenge one faces, you know, being aware in whose presence you are and what you are talking about.
Yes. To all the time consciously live in every moment knowing that he is the supreme consciousness.
You are playing with fire. I can tell you that.
I know.
It's playing with fire. You just have to know the correct distance, you know, which will just warm you and not burn you.
Yes.
And that's tough. Judging the distance is very tough.
Very difficult. But are there any instances of this kind, you know, in your association with Bhagwan, where, you know, Swami told you something and you either scrupulously followed or didn't follow, but you learned that lesson?
Many. Many. But one of the things which I remember the most was, you know, which I fondly call as the chandelier incident. I think I've narrated it in a few talks, but...
Yes, I think so, long ago.
I would not like to forget that incident because, you know, it is ingrained very deeply in my heart. You know, when the super specialty hospital was being constructed, you know, lots of these beautiful chandeliers, you know, devotees sent from all over the world. And Swami would see each chandelier, not just from the outside. He would have us assemble that. Incidentally, you know, we mastered the art of assembling the chandelier. And we also had a neat setup, you know. The chandelier has to have the central rod placed and around that you have to build the chandelier by putting in the petals and other things. So to hang the central rod, we had two bamboo stacks, you know, over which we hung it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would assemble that thing around that. Now this was, this chandelier arrived at 7 o'clock or in the night, you know, when Swami actually used to retire to his rooms.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, this is a small chandelier, you know, if you start assembling it now, it will take half an hour, Swami will get delayed. So, Swami never asked about it anyhow. So, we just kept quiet. We just kept it aside. We said, we'll assemble it tomorrow morning by the time Swami comes. We will assemble it and we will display it. Swami was aware of it or he was expecting it. I do not know. So, he called and said, has the chandelier come? We said, yes, Swami. They said, why didn't you assemble it? Then we told Swami, it is late. We thought you will go to your room. He said, no, I'll wait. You assemble it. Then we opened the box. It was a very small chandelier. So, I told the other person, you know, who was there with me, see, why waste that bamboo pole and all that? I'll do one thing. I'll hold the central pole in my hand. Mm-hmm. You assemble it quickly so that we will save the time, you know, putting up the bamboo poles and tying it and all that. So he said, okay. So we started assembling. And after 10 minutes, Swami came. He saw what we were doing. He said, is it over? We said, no, Swami, it'll get over. We are finishing it. Then just as he was about to, I turned back and he looked at me and he said, are you sure you are comfortable holding that rod in your hand? Maybe it's better you tie it to that bamboo pole like you usually tie.
Mm-hmm.
So, I didn't get the hint. So, I told him, no, Swami, it is a small chandelier, it is okay, I'll hold it in my hand. Swami said, me ishtam.
Your wish.
Your wish. And he went away. After 10 minutes, he comes again. The chandelier was almost assembled. And then Swami again asked me, second time. That this is, even a blind person knows, you know, that something is. I was so stupendously blind at that time. So second time, are you sure you want to hold it in your hand? Why don't you tie it to the pole? Again, I told him, no, Swami, this is comfortable. It's a very small chandelier. Swami said, Nishtamra. He said, and he went off.
Again, your wish.
Your wish. He gave up. Because some people, Swami knows, you know, that they will learn only the hard way. Unfortunately, I was one of them. So, third time when he came, it was ready. And then Swami said, put on the switch. And they put on the switch. And the chandelier lit up and I started dancing.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, I was being electrocuted. I was holding the central rod somewhere where the leak was there. And I was getting electrocuted. So, I was shaking and I was standing.
Oh, my God.
Sri Chiranjeeva was standing there. He was staring at me. I said, what is wrong with this fellow? Why is he dancing like this? The other boy who was there with me is also staring at me. Why is he dancing? Swami was the only one who realized what's happening. But you know what he does? He collapsed on the chair laughing.
Swami?
Yeah, he just fell down on the chair laughing, you know, seeing me dance like this. And then, you know, he got up and he said, put off the switch. So then they put off the switch. I just put the chandelier down like that and I collapsed. And Swami saw, then he explained to everybody. Shock got in the vadiki, he said.
He had a shock.
Yeah, then he lifted me and he said, next time when I'm going to tell you something, you better listen.
It's such a shocking way
of telling
you.
Yeah, I just nodded like this. I understood. So twice he had warned me, but I refused to see the lesson. But look at the beauty of the statement. Next time when I tell you, that means he is sure I'm going to make a similar mistake once again. When I tell you, if you listen, it is good for you. He didn't say listen to what I said. He said, if you listen, that free will he is still giving you. So, you just see the statement what he said. See, next time when I tell you, if you listen to me, it is good for you. So, next time.
He always gives us that free will, that option.
Free will. And most importantly, he is also budgeting the fact that this fellow will continue to make mistakes. But he is not going to abandon me.
Yes.
So, just because I am not listening to him this time, it's not that he is not planning to tell me next time. This is what, if you recollect, I was telling you. It's about the intention.
Yes.
Like, I never did things, you know, with the intentions of, you know, hurting Swami or defying him.
Yes.
It was always out of my own ignorance.
Ignorance, yes.
And it is like the ignorance of, I always felt that it was the ignorance of a child with its mother.
Yeah.
The mother would never retaliate or take revenge, you know, just because the child is being ignorant.
Yeah.
You know, that is how I always viewed my relation with Bhagwan.
And Bhagwan has always been patient. I think every student can vouch for it. You know, he's always been patient.
Enormously patient.
Yeah. So that, you know, we get that lesson. Even if you fall 100 times.
It is not one difficult child he is dealing with, you know. He is dealing with millions of difficult children here. So, you know.
But no wonder really.
No wonder you call him the universal mother.
Mother.
Just like I am getting my lesson. You are getting it at your own level. Somebody else is getting it at some other level.
Yes.
That means he is tackling millions of people at the same time.
Amazing.
And still giving individual attention to each one.
That's why he's got
that's it. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah. But was it really a next time?
Might have been.
You don't know.
You know, I was a stubborn child. You know. he used to get exasperated sometimes. And I was pretty stubborn, yeah.
Mm.
Not that I feel proud about it, but unfortunately that is the way I was built. And I think that stubbornness.
We all come with our own vasanas and.
Yeah.
And that is what the Jagadguru is all the time doing.
Yeah.
He's all the time refining.
It's possible that that's what prevented me from really capitalizing my stay with Bhagwan 100%. I was stubborn.
But I think we have grown. Every year we have grown, isn't it?
Definitely. See, it is something like this, you know, when the heat is given, the ice melts. It has no choice.
Yes.
So, you know, when you are in Bhagwan's physical presence, you change. You have no choice. You change on your own, even though you are not aware.
Yes.
So that change definitely.
Because you are in the presence of that supreme colossus of purity.
Yeah. So at some level you do start changing, even if you don't make any effort. If you make effort, that change is amplified.
Yes.
So that. But how many of us are fortunate enough to make use of that? Yes. I don't know. I definitely didn't utilize it fully. I can vouch for that.
Mm. But I think. Oh, what is really amazing is, you know, how this supreme teacher, we talked about Bhagwan as Jagadguru, how he chooses these instances to drill into us these lessons, and in a manner that you'll never ever forget. You know, this incident, it was such a quote-unquote shocking incident.
Yeah, it is a literally electrifying,
electrifying incident.
Electrifying incident, yeah.
You know, when it comes to
following Bhagwan's instructions, this will just flash in your mind. You can never ever forget. Even if you make a mistake, you know, now you will, this will come back so forcefully back to you that you will be on the path.
That's true.
That's really something phenomenal. And you know, as you're talking about these times that you had living with Bhagwan in the Purnachandra Auditorium, all this more than 10 years, and you had this mystery of Bhagwan in the sense that you have sometime being so humanly divine and divinely human all the time, and this play all the time going on, sometimes it confuses you, and there are times when you actually completely stunned with the reality that Bhagwan is, you know, when he parts that veil, as they say. So if you can recall for us any of those moments, you know, when you were stupefied with what Bhagwan said, you know, those revelatory moments of the avatar.
I must tell you that, you know, the life with him inside was rarely, ever saw such moments. Like, that's why I told you it's very difficult to forget in whose presence you are. Because when in his personal moments with him inside, when you're serving him, he's anything but divine.
Yes.
Yeah, he's anything but divine. For some strange reason, he always chooses to be more human.
Yeah.
But does that mean that we never had that glimpses of the stupendous divinity? No, we did have. We did have it. Only thing is, you know, sometimes you were not alert enough to grasp it. Sometimes you were fortunate enough to grasp it.
Yes.
You know that there was a time when the Kulwant Hall was being constructed. You know, all the programs were being taken place inside Purnachandra Auditorium.
Yes.
So Swami would walk out from...
93, 94.
Yes. See, in these chambers, he would walk out and then, you know, he would have the program there and then, you know, he would come back. There was also a time, you know, when only for the major functions, the function would be held in Kulwant Hall. And if there were any dramas or anything, they would be held in Purnachandra Auditorium. It is only at the later point of time when Bhagwan couldn't travel, move around much, that all the dramas, etc. also started taking place.
And Kulwant Hall also was expanded.
Yes. So, at that time, you know, there was one group of people who were from Germany and Australia and, you know, Greek. It was a Greek drama that was about to take place. And we had Dr. Bhagwat. He was medical superintendent of the General Hospital.
Yes.
Now, he came rushing and he told Tekobai, there was a Japanese devotee, a lady who is in a very critical shape and she's not going to make it over the night. We are not able to control it. There was a team of international doctors who were actually there at Prashanthi Nilayam on a duty, seva, because it was a birthday season.
Okay.
And they all certified, you know, and they said, it is difficult, this lady is not going to make it through the night.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted permission to inform the Japanese embassy and inform her son, so that the son can come and be with the mother and if required, take the body away. So when Swami walked in, the Austrian people had finished their drama and the Greek devotees were about to perform their drama. And so Dr. Bhagwat told us, and I told Swami, Dr. Bhagwat is here, he is telling like this. And then Swami said, okay, and he just went away. What is the instruction now? Swami just said, okay, and he just walked off, non-calling, he was least bothered. He just went away. So at that time, you know, we were under some kind of stress, you know, birthday season is very stressful for those of people, you know, who are in the helm of things, organizing and all those. So we said, how do we tell Dr. Bhagwat? Swami just said, okay, and he left. And then Dr. Bhagwat was waiting outside, so we told him, sir, Swami didn't say anything, he just said, okay. He said, see, that doesn't work for me. Because as a medical superintendent, it's my responsibility. Should I tell anything or shouldn't I tell anything? I said, sir, we are sorry, we can't help you. Then he said, he went and this time Dr. Safai came. And he said, that person is very serious, why? You have to inform Swami, something has to be done. Then we again informed Swami. Swami said, yeah, you told me already. Why are you repeatedly telling me this? Don't tell me.
Oh.
And this time I told, sir, I'm sorry, we cannot do anything. You know, Swami has told us that he is aware of this and he has not told us anything. There's, if you want, you can stand in the front and talk to Swami, take the instructions. So then they said, okay. Dr. Bhagwat and Dr. Safai were there. They said, it's okay. Whatever Bhagwan says, no, what do we do? And they went away. Next morning, when I, 6 o'clock, you know, the Sevadal knocked on the door and said, Dr. Bhagwat is here. So we thought the worst would have happened. And when we saw Dr. Bhagwat, he was a different person.
Oh.
He said, what do you want me to tell you? Night when we were expecting her to pass away, and we went in the morning, this lady was sitting up and she wanted idlis.
Oh my God.
And you know, then she told them, it seems that she had an extraordinary vision of Bhagwan, you know, coming with her, taking her to some fiery place and then bringing her back and telling you are safe. And she was totally fine. So then I just wanted to tell Swami, please inform Swami about this. So that morning Swami went for darshan, we didn't have time. So afternoon some VIPs were sitting with Swami Central Trust members and I was there, I told Swami, Dr. Bhagwat had come. He has said that, you know, like this happened. And Swami said, I told you yesterday. Then he looked at the Central Trust members and said, this fellow is very fond of killing people who are already alive. He pointed at me and he said, I was telling him that this lady is going to live, not to bother. And he was repeatedly telling me, Dr. Bhagwat is telling this, Dr. Bhagwat is telling this. Is Dr. Bhagwat going to save her or am I going to save her? So it was such a stunning moment for me, really. I said, but still, I was torn between my duty to carry the message to Bhagwan,
yeah,
at the same time understanding that Bhagwan can do anything. So, but nevertheless, it's not that he took it out on me.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't take it out on me. But you ask me, these are the rare occasions, you know, where I suddenly was faced with the reality, you know, of in whose presence I am in. Most of the other times, you know, it was anything but divinity from him. He used to be most human.
Yes.
Yeah. For some reason, he chose to be that way.
I think perhaps so that you can actually serve him. Because if he knows everything and if he is aware of everything, then you really would
possible.
Find it difficult to actually go and tell him anything.
Yeah, maybe possible. That could be one possible reason. He had his reasons, I'm sure.
Yeah, yes.
I'm sure he must be having his reasons for that.
But I think even before he gave you that chance, he worked on you for so many years, preparing you for that. Because, you know, because here is a time when you have to serve the physical frame and you'll be seeing so much of the human side of him. But at the same time, you have to keep your focus.
Intuition,
right.
Yes. That's what I was telling you. See, when the heat comes, the ice has no choice but to melt. So in the sense that when you are in a physical presence and he wants you to function in some role, you can rest assured that at some level he's already preparing you and training you for it. Of that, see, we have seen that thing so many times, you know, that God never gives you a task, you know, for which he thinks you are not prepared.
Yes.
Either he's going to train you on the way or he has already trained you, but he's never going to give you the task for which he thinks you are not prepared.
Okay.
For example, that speech abruptly extempore. He would never have told me that unless he was sure, you know, that I was going to execute it with his grace.
Yes.
I was not ready to accept that fact, but he knew it was going to happen. Similarly, you know, like mistakes when you make, you know, correcting you and, you know, all those things. So he's aware of that. So that's the reason. And, you know, God never gives you a task for which he thinks you're not prepared.
Yes.
At some level, he's already preparing you or he has already prepared you.
Yes.
We may not be aware of that, but he certainly knows it.
I think, and all the times when there are setbacks in our lives, I think those are the moments when we should know that God is still repairing us, is working on us for what he's perhaps waiting to confer on us.
I'll be fair with you that when I was in Puttaparthi, that was a very protected environment. I really didn't know what stress and strain in life was all about. But having gone out into the world, I've become a part of the world, and you know, though I've tried my best not to let the world go into me, I have tried my best, you know, to retain the principles I have learned with Bhagwan, and I still go about my prayers, I still go about what Bhagwan has taught me and execute my duty especially in the way Bhagwan taught me. So, but the fact remains, you know, that having faced this stress and strain, I actually realize, you know, that how much of training he has actually given. It is that training which is sustaining me outside.
Yes.
There are many times which you get frustrated and, you know, and you question Bhagwan, you know, why did you actually have to send me away? Had I continued in Puttaparthi, maybe, you know, I would have been able to serve better. I would have been able to develop myself better and all that. But that is not how Bhagwan sees it.
Yes.
He has different purposes, different methodologies and different reasons for different people. It doesn't, there is no one uniform principle for everybody except love. Love is common for everybody. How it is distributed to people and how people experience it is different for different people.
In which form and to whom and how much and when.
Exactly.
Yes.
So it is like the sugar, you know, which is common, but sweets have different shapes. Like that, he distributes it in different ways. For him in 2008, when he told me, you have served me faithfully for 23 years, now you go and look after your father, you are the only son. That was a sweet he is giving me. I don't think it was a bane. When he dispatched me from Puttaparthi and told me, you know, to go and look after your father, and he threw me into the outside world. Sometimes I do feel, you know, that it was a curse which he gave me for some mistake I did. But later on, I found and said, you know, see, I never really, is God really capable of cursing somebody? If that curse is what you and me call, that is also another form of his love.
It is always a blessing.
It is also some form of love. Because, you know, God is one person who can never curse.
Yes.
If he is harsh, it is another expression of his love.
The greatest well-wisher we can ever have.
Yes. Yeah. And at one point of time, I debated and I thought, see, how can I ever accuse Swami of doing that?
Yes.
Okay, he has dispatched me from his presence. Maybe that's true. But maybe I have to learn a lesson there. So, what I'm trying to tell you therefore here is, you know, that that stress and strain which I started experiencing when I became a part of the outside world, you know, actually taught me several times, you know, that if I'm sustaining and still stable and able to discharge my duty properly, it's because of the training that he had given me here.
Yes.
And that feeling, you know, that he's always there with me. That, and come what may,
yes,
you know, that, he, nobody can really make, you know, me believe that Swami is not there with me.
Wow.
That is also the training which he gave me here.
Fantastic. This is what actually I wanted to ask you, you know, in this stress and strain, as you mentioned, of the outside world and the vicissitudes of life, what is it that is really giving you the strength? You know, what are those one or two things, you know, that
small
are really
signs
helping you?
See, very, very small signs, very, very small signs, you know, but they are there. All the time they are there, you know, that tell you that he is there with you.
Yes.
Like, I'll tell you, in February month, you know, Dad had a heart attack, you know, and nobody knew whether he was going to pull through in the night.
February 2015.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was in Bangalore. Mm-hmm. And the last flight, you know, which was going to Bangalore, and from there, if I had to take, I'd already left.
Mm-hmm.
So, I had to wait till the next morning. The first flight was 8:50. It was a jet flight.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go to Bangalore, wait there for a couple of hours, and then go to Hyderabad. That was the fastest way to reach Hyderabad.
Mm-hmm.
The whole night, I wouldn't sleep. I didn't slow because nobody knew whether Father would make it through the night. He was in ICU.
Oh, my God.
But Swami kept him alive. And you will not believe it. In the morning, when I, with a sleepy face, I got up and I went to the airport, you would not believe it. The person standing in front of me in the tray, in the queue, had two huge suitcases with two huge pictures of Swami on it. For 2 years, I have been traveling to Bangalore. I never saw a single photograph of Bhagwan. And here, I have two suitcases right in front of me with two huge pictures of Bhagwan in front of me. How do you explain that?
Yes.
It was just his way of telling me, just take it easy. I am watching you go.
Yes.
You did your duty. Let me do mine. Trust me, when I actually reached, Dad was there in ICU for 3 days. I saw my dad discharged from the ICU, again get up and walk.
Wow.
Now, this is the small signs I was trying to tell you.
Yes.
It's not that, you know, clouds opened up and a divine Akashwani told me, you know, Bhagwan is watching you, don't worry, your father will be safe, like in movies and all. You know, nothing like that happened. But if you analyze it, in 2.5 years when I have been frequently traveling to Hyderabad, I never ever saw a single photograph of Bhagwan on the way to the airport or in the airport, let alone, you know. And suddenly out of the blue, there are two huge suitcases in front of me with two huge pictures of Bhagwan, that Satya Dharma Shanti Prema emblem with Bhagwan's picture in between. How do you explain that? That is Swami telling you. So these are small things like that. Sometimes when you are having a big tension, you're driving, you see a car in front of me, you know, I'm always there with you and Bhagwan sticker on it.
Yes.
I'm not joking. This is what happened.
Yeah.
I've seen it several times.
Constantly. In fact, as Bhagwan, I remember during one Dasara, he said that, you know, for every instance of Prahlada, for every instance of Draupadi, for every instance of Gajendra that you know or read or talk about, there are a million such instances which you don't know, which we are perhaps not aware, not alive to, but they're happening all the time.
You just have to watch. That's what I'm trying to
be alert.
You have to watch and you have to be alert.
And there are these times, like you mentioned, where he goes to the extent of making it conspicuous for us. Hello, realize I'm there.
Even Mangalore, you know, in summer months it can be terribly hot. You know, once I was running a very high fever and we had a power cut.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I was not able to sleep. So I was praying to Swami. The next day, 2 days was going to be very tight for me, you know. And I was praying to Swami, you know, and in the middle of the summer, there was a cool breeze. Now, how do you explain that cool breeze? I have only one explanation. So,
yes.
Okay, fine. If you say logically speaking, what is there? Once in a while, cool breeze will come. But why did it have to come only then? Entire 2 months of summer, nothing happened. How come suddenly it came that time? At that point of time, I look at it that it was a small grace of Swami saying that I am listening to you.
Yes.
You cannot dispute that.
Yes.
So, but that's what I am trying to tell you. So each person
knows it.
Each person knows, because those messages and those signs are meant for some particular individuals only. The rest of them will find it routine.
Yes.
The person to whom it is concerned will find it anything but routine.
Yes.
But alertness is required.
Absolutely. In fact, I was just talking a few days back to one brother who was in the primary school, and you know, he was narrating this incident of how one day he had lost his socks, and because of which the primary school madam, she did not allow him to play. So he was actually sitting on the sidelines and watching his friends play and feeling very sad. And they a couple of days after that, they go for darshan, and when they're all seated, Bhagwan comes out and he asks some boys to go inside the interview room and bring out boxes, and you know, and what comes out, guess what it is? It is socks. So it is socks being distributed. But the most interesting thing is, everyone gets a pair of socks each, but Bhagwan goes to this boy and drops quietly 2 pairs of socks. So, you know, even as a class 1 kid, it was so ingrained in him that Bhagwan will be there all the time with me.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to tell you. What can easily be passed off as routine,
yes,
you know, by others, can actually, you know, be read as some very startling signs by a few.
Yes. And I think these are the signs with which I think all of us who connect to Bhagwan find our inspiration.
Yes.
Find our strength.
The thing is, there is no requirement to publicize them, because like I told you, it's a private message.
Yes.
It needs to be remained as private.
And that is what, when Bhagwan says that self-confidence, and you get that self-confidence because of this.
Exactly.
And you know that he is there. Wonderful. Thank you very much, sir. I know we can go on now, because today perhaps we have only got a glimpse of the different facets of what Dr. Sainath has experienced. Little as a student, little as a public speaker, little as someone who served Bhagwan, and little as someone who served the VIPs. And that also is again a very small drop of what you have experienced. And I'm very happy that, you know, in this time when we are celebrating Ganesh Chaturthi, we have begun this beautiful discussion.
That's another sign, I think, that we have read.
Yes. Yes, and I hope that, you know, we get more opportunities to have this satsang.
Let's look at it as a Sri Ganesh.
Yes.
Yes. Definitely.
So I once again offer my gratitude to Bhagwan for making this possible, and I request to you, sir, that, you know, whenever you are here in Puttaparthi next, please feel free to come to the studios and let us continue this beautiful satsang.
Yeah, it would be my pleasure, and I also once again bow to Bhagwan in gratitude for giving me this opportunity to share a few thoughts and spend some very moments. You know, these are moments which actually make me very happy, because I recollected those moments with Bhagwan. And this is a treasure of happiness, you know, that I am going to carry as the greatest gift of my visit to Prashanthin Lane with me. Thank you very much.
It's a gift for all of us.
Thank you. Thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you, Sairam.
Sairam, dear listeners, you just heard the conclusion of a fleeting moments interview with Dr. Sainath. He was in conversation with Radio Sai's Mr. Bishu Prashti. We look forward to your feedback to this interview. As always, you can reach us by email at listener@radiosai.org. Now, as I had promised you at the start of the show, I wish to share with you the genesis and the purpose of the Gram Seva, which has been going on here since the year 2000. It was in October of 2000 when a poor, widowed and helpless mother in the Anandpur district took the extreme step of killing herself and her 2 young children. Obviously, because of poverty. Swami spoke to the teachers of the university, making a direct reference to the incident. He was extremely moved by it, and Swami wanted his students and staff to act on his behalf. Swami wanted all the students and teachers to go to every single house in the neighboring villages of the 3 mandals, that is Puttaparthi, Kottacheruvu and Bukkapatnam of the Anandpur district. And he wanted them to distribute his tokens of love in the form of a sari, a dhoti sari for the lady and dhoti for the gentleman, the heads of the family, as well as laddus and rice prasadam for all the inmates of the house, and this was to be delivered at their doorstep as Swami's prasadam. Swami says, and I quote him, "Students today are acquiring considerable scientific knowledge. It serves only to promote civilized living in the world. But what the students need today is the refinement of the heart. This is possible only through an internal process. Students who have imbibed the modern culture should not only develop their intellects, but should also develop a broad outlook. A complete education is that which makes a person compassionate." Unquote. Through Gram Seva, Swami made a huge difference to two groups of people. Firstly, the villagers were extremely happy to know that there's someone out there who really cares for them. Secondly, most of the students get a first-hand chance to experience the living conditions of the poor people in the villages. Reading about phrases like "India lives in its villages" is one thing, but to actually experience the reality is quite another. Since its inception, the Gram Seva program has deeply influenced the outlook of Sai students, thus driving home its essence and central purpose. In the first year, that is in October of 2000, Gram Seva was initially planned to cover a population of 10,000 people per day. This gradually kept increasing and stabilized at about 30,000 people being served every single day. Some of the salient statistics of the Gram Seva undertaken in the last few years are as follows. The number of mandals. Mandals is a cluster of villages for jurisdictional purposes. So the number of mandals covered is 3. Total number of villages and towns covered, 150. I repeat, 150 villages. Number of vehicles used, over 50 trucks and jeeps and SUVs. Time frame, 9 to 10 days of the Dasera festival. Average distance covered per day, between 25 to 50 kilometers each way. So that would be 50 to 100 kilometers back and forth. Time taken to reach the interiors, up to 2 to 3 hours each way. Now here is an interesting aside about Gram Seva. The management of the Gram Seva, now this is a mammoth project. The cooking is done at night, the Anandpur girls sit and pack through the night, the boys are ready early morning in their whites and whites, in their trucks loading all the ready to deliver food packets. So the management of the Gram Seva was designed based on the concepts of viable and adaptive organization, capable not only of learning, but also disseminating knowledge as the program proceeds. It's modular in design and capable of being scaled up. Information and its flow are well regulated. This ensures that there are no shortages of prasadam, nor is there excess and wastage of the same. Distribution is to be completed on time so that all can come back to Prashanthi Nilayam at the same time. This is so typical of the efficiency and precision that has come to define the Sai movement's outlook and work ethic. And talk of integrating secular and spiritual learning, this is such a perfect example. Also, interestingly, before the students begin to serve in a village, they first go around the village singing bhajans and chanting Vedam. This not only brings a sacred fervor and a sublime atmosphere, it also motivates the villagers to take part in singing the glory of the Lord. It just brings them all together in unity and it creates a nice atmosphere. In addition to this, the students understand the layout of the village as they go around singing. They get a good idea of the main lanes and the sub lanes, and this enables them to divide themselves into subgroups and serve all the houses efficiently. The aim is to leave no villager behind. This is something that I'm sure you will agree with me, only a teacher who is pure love incarnate, pure wisdom incarnate could achieve. How you even believe that Swami instructed the students to find out how many members in a household. And accordingly, Swami asked them, give them that many number of packets of rice and laddu prasadam. But, dear listeners, would you believe it, that Swami told them explicitly, he warned them, don't cross-question or validate the number of the inmates in the house. Because out of desperate living conditions, some of them may overstate the number, so because they want to get more packets of prasadam. Swami said, let us give them as many packets as they ask for. If, for example, if it's a family of six, they might say we are nine of us because they want to get three extra packets. Swami said, let's give them the feeling that they are being trusted. So whatever number they state, give them that much prasadam. Don't cross-reference. Can you even imagine that? What a lesson in positive reinforcement. So over the years of Grama Seva, this is the 15th year, people on their own don't feel like exaggerating the numbers because they appreciate the honesty and the love with which this is delivered to them. This feeling transforms even those who initially quoted wrong figures. Dear listeners, it is such teachings of love incarnate Bhagwan Baba that make our Prashanti Nilayam the seat of supreme beauty, ultimate truth, and all things auspicious. Dharma and Prashanti Nilayam become synonymous. With that, I'm nearly done with my hosting of Morning Glory. And dear listeners, you still have a task pending for you. So please, I urge you to fire up your email and share your thoughts on today's program by reaching us by email at listener@radiosai.org. And now, as I bid you Sai Ram and I offer Morning Glory at the Lotus Feet, I thank you for your company. Till we meet next Thursday, please be well, keep seeking, and stay inspired. Happy Vijayadashmi once again from all of us at Team Radio Sai. Jai Sai Ram.